Chapter 6. I'm sure I wasn't alone in brooding over Logash's offhand announcement as we penetrated deeper into the maze of passages that made up the Amble Den. The thought that we shared these tunnels with an indeterminate number of heavily armored predators wasn't exactly comforting, and we pressed on with renewed caution. The labyrinth was remarkably extensive, as the tech priest had noted. If we'd had to walk every meter of it, we'd still have been down there when the Emperor stepped off the throne. But fortunately, that wasn't going to be necessary.
1. Such beliefs in the Emperor became remarkably widespread as the turn of the millennium approached. Cain wasn't superstitious enough to place any credence in such folk tales, of course, but, like many others, used the phrase metaphorically to mean the start of M42, which, of course, at that point was still 68 standard years in the future.
Between my Hiver's instincts, Logash's knowledge of xenology, and the readings of his auspects, we were beginning to get a pretty good idea of the layout of the place. "Any idea how many more of those things there are down here?" I asked him once I was sure we were out of earshot of any of the troopers, except Jürgen, of course, whose discretion I knew I could rely on absolutely. No point in spooking them any further if the answer was as bad as I feared. Logash looked pensive for a moment, as though communing with some inner voice, which he may well have been. I've known plenty of tech priests with augmetic data stores plugged into what's left of their brains, but he may just have had indigestion. "Judging by the extent of the tunnel system, and assuming that our guess they arrived on the same space hulk as the orcs is correct," he began, which it wasn't, as we were shortly to find out, but the timing was the same, so it didn't make any practical difference in the end. He was interrupted by a fusillade of lasgun fire further down the tunnel and a babble of shouting voices that overlapped into nothing but multitudinous echoes in the confined and twisting tunnels. I activated my combead. "Griffin, what's going on?" I asked. "Contact! Another creature!" Her voice was crisp and steady, so the situation seemed under control. I hurried forward, not wanting to be too far from the bulk of our firepower if any more of the beasts were attracted to the sounds of combat. "No more than half a dozen," Logash finished, panting in my wake. No doubt he felt the same urge, only stronger than I did, as he was the only member of our party who was completely unarmed. Whether he still had enough meat on him to actually interest an amble was a moot point, of course, but I declined to consider it at the time. "Probably fewer by now," he added, as the firing stopped. Well, that was a relief. Those creatures aren't all that tough compared to some of the things I'd faced. And the news that we weren't likely to run into too many more of them was undeniably welcome. The carcass of our latest victim was lying a few metres further on in a wider tunnel that opened out from the one we followed. It was surrounded by chattering troopers and riddled with the cauterized craters of lasbolt impacts. Voorhees was breathing heavily, trembling from the reaction, and shrugging off the attentions of the squad medic. The front of his flak armour was deeply scored, visible through the rents in his greatcoat. I gathered from the conversations around me that the amble had just managed to get within arm's reach of him before he finally succeeded in dropping it. "Well done," I said, clapping him on the back. It never hurt to show the troopers I cared, even if I didn't. He grinned weakly at me. "Persistent little frackers, aren't they, sir?" I nodded. "Take a bit of putting down," I agreed, which of course indirectly reminded everyone I'd taken mine down hand to hand. I glanced at the carcass, wondering if it was the one I'd shot before, but Voorhees had made such a mess of it blazing away on full auto that there wasn't really enough left intact to tell. "Fast too," Voorhees agreed. It seemed that the thing had come at him along the main tunnel almost as soon as he'd entered it. He'd just been able to bring his weapon up before it was on him. "Interesting," Logash said. He was looking at the walls of the tunnel and messing around with his auspects again. After a moment he turned back to me. "I think we found one of the main runs." Well, it certainly seemed a lot wider than the tunnels we'd been following before. "Which means?" I asked. The tech priest shrugged, his white robe beginning to look distinctly grubby now, I noticed. Hardly the most practical garment for tunnel fighting, but evidently it hadn't occurred to him to get changed before setting out. Either that, or he didn't have anything else to wear in any case. "The main chamber should be at the end of this passageway." He glanced uncertainly up and down it. I considered his words carefully. "Main chamber, meaning?" I asked. Logash responded with the eagerness of the enthusiast. The central nesting site, or den, ambles are social creatures with strong familial instincts and tend to congregate when not hunting or Voorhees, I said. Which direction did the creature come from? Logash looked a little hurt at being abruptly cut off, just as he felt he was getting to the interesting bit, no doubt. The trooper jerked a thumb past the rapidly cooling chunk of meat, which was now surrounded by a garnet-coloured nimbus of frozen blood. That way, he indicated. My sense of direction kicked in, and I absently noted that it was almost directly towards the orc siege lines. A sense of grim foreboding settled across my shoulders. If I was returning to the lair, it would have been carrying prey of some kind to share with the others, Logash chipped in helpfully. The pool of light from our illuminators revealed nothing apart from the dismembered amble. There was the answer. We weren't going to be able to complete our reconnaissance mission without passing through a cavern full of these monstrosities. Wonderful. But bowel-clenching as the prospect appeared, I like the idea of a horde of orcs pouring through these tunnels to slaughter the lot of us even less. Close up, I ordered. Be ready to concentrate your firepower. Griffin nodded and went to shout at Hale and Simla, who were blunting their combat knives by trying to hack the amble's head off. Up to that point, I thought she'd been kidding about taking a trophy back with us, but it seemed at least two of her troopers had taken her literally. Move out, she ordered. By teams, covering the commissar and the cogboy.
One. A less than complimentary slang term for tech priests, apparently derived from their symbol of office. It is common among guard troopers, along with several others, most of which are considerably more offensive.
Logash showed considerably more common sense than hitherto by pretending he hadn't heard her. I must confess to feeling a little better, though, knowing everyone else would be watching my back. In case you were wondering why Griffin should care about my welfare and Logash's, I was deemed to be the best judge of the value of any intelligence we might gather. And Logash, well, let's just say Castine didn't want to have any more dealings with the Adeptus Mechanicus than she already did. So we moved out cautiously, heading towards the centre of the maze, our senses alert for any sign of movement in the darkness. We debated dousing a few of our illuminators in the hope that we'd make ourselves less obvious, but according to Logash, it wouldn't make any difference as the creatures could see in the dark anyway. He started to explain how, but it made no sense to me, and I soon stopped listening.
Two. According to the Magos Biologos, they can see heat rather than light. Rather an odd concept, I have to say, but having looked through a Tau blacklight system recently, I can attest from personal experience that such a phenomenon can be achieved by techno-sorcery, so I suppose it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that it might also occur in nature.
Second team still had the lead position. Griffin was already showing a veteran commander's common sense when it came to hanging back enough to keep an objective eye on the whole squad, although Carter, the ASL and corporal in charge of the fire team, had rotated Voorhees back to where the medic could keep an eye on him and had put Dreer on point.
Three. The ASL, assistant squad leader, a lower-ranking NCO trained to take command if the sergeant becomes a casualty. Where a squad has been divided into fire teams, which, as has already been noted, was standard practice in the 597th, the ASL will normally take command of the second team when it becomes detached from the first and the direct control of the sergeant.
Made a kind of sense, I suppose, as Voorhees was still pretty twitchy after his close encounter with the amble, but I'd have been inclined to leave him where he was. If he was going to be trigger-happy, I'd rather have him where there was nothing but targets in front. I was behind him in any case there. So it was all one to me. Jürgen, Logash and I trotted along in the middle, keeping a cautious distance between the leading team and the one covering our backs, because if either made contact, I wanted to be well out of harm's way. Of course, I was still uneasily aware of the amble's ability to carve their way straight through the ice to get at us, but I kept my ears open and my paranoia cranked up to maximum, and so far I hadn't noticed any of the telltale vibrations which might betray the approach of another of the beasts. So what do they taste like? Jürgen asked. I stopped tuning out Logash's prattling to gather that his monologue on the subject of the amble's life cycle, social structure and habitat had finally yielded some useful information. Apparently there had been a number of attempts to domesticate the things as a handy source of meat on desert worlds.
One. With a conspicuous lack of success, if truth be told. Their burrowing abilities make them almost impossible to confine, with the inevitable result that the colonies which tried soon found themselves overrun with dangerous predators.
Rather like Grox, I'm told. Logash looked a little uncomfortable, and I clapped him on the shoulder. Excellent, I said. We'll send a scavenging party to recover the carcasses once we've cleaned out the nest. All the refinery had to offer in the way of cuisine was a dozen different varieties of Soylent's Viridians, which had already begun to pall, despite being fresh from their own vats. Of course, we brought our own supplies along, but a nice fresh steak would lift my spirits nicely, I thought. Besides, the creatures had been eating the miners, so it seemed fair enough to return the compliment. Good idea, sir, Jürgen said with relish. Logash looked a little green for someone so heavily augmented. Maybe he was a vegetarian, if he still bothered eating at all. I can hear movement, Dreher said, her voice slightly flattened by the combead in my ear. Close up, prepare for contact. Griffin issued the order with calm authority, and I found myself at the centre of a small knot of troopers as first team caught up with us. We picked up our pace, fell in with them, and began closing on the lights from the illuminators of second team. There's a cavern here. Dreher's voice tightened a little. The tension she must have felt transmitting itself through the gently hissing combead in my ear. Hold position, Carter said, his own voice calm, but with audible effort. Wait for the rest of us. Confirm that, Dreher said, a faint edge of relief entering her voice. The dancing lights ahead of us were closer together now, I thought, refracting more brightly through the crystal shards which rhymed the irregular walls of the tunnel. I'm not about to stick my Emperor's guts! A lasgun opened up, bright muzzle flashes strobing down the reflective tunnel, and the illuminators ahead of us bobbed more wildly than before as their bearers broke into a run. We followed suit, our boot soles crunching onto the ice crystals underfoot. Logash slipped from time to time as he lost traction. The Valhallans, of course, had no such difficulties, and I'd picked up enough expertise in running on ice from them over the years to avoid my own feet slithering out from under me. I drew my las pistol. Janny! Voorhees shouted, and a second weapon opened up in support. A moment later, there was a shriek which echoed through the tunnels, raising the hairs on my arms, and a howl of feedback through the combead which made my teeth ache. Medic! Trooper down! Carter yelled, and by that time the rest of us had reached the scene of the carnage. The tunnel had indeed opened out into a large central chamber about 30 meters across, and with a handful of other passageways visibly piercing the walls at irregular intervals. Dreher was down, steaming blood starting to freeze in a slick, hard plate over a gaping wound in her torso. Her face was pinched and white from the shock. Voorhees stood over her, pouring lasfire into the monstrosity which had evidently inflicted the damage, driving it back, screaming in rage and frustration.
One. It's not entirely clear from this final subordinate clause whether Kane is referring to the Amble or the Trooper. Sometimes he lets his immersion in his memories run ahead of his comprehensibility. After some reflection, I've elected to let his wording stand, as, under the circumstances, either or both seem equally likely.
The cavern was a positive maelstrom of whirling bodies and wild firing. Luminator beams and lasbolts strobed as the troopers swung the muzzles of their weapons to meet the nearest perceived threat. It was no place for me, I decided, standing aside to let Griffin's team join the melee. I held an arm across Logash's chest as though I intended to keep him from harm. In actual fact, of course, if one of the beasts had come anywhere near us, it could have had him and been welcome. And if I'd known just how much trouble he was shortly to cause us, I'd probably have thrown him to the closest and bidden it bon appetit. The reinforcements pitched in with a will, targeting the seething mass of enraged monstrosities which were boiling out of the shadows at us. There were too many to count, or at least that's how it seemed at the time. When the ice chips finally settled, it transpired that Logash's estimate hadn't been all that far out, with a mere 5 of the creatures stretched out on the floor. But if you had asked me to take a stab at the numbers amid all that confusion, I'd have probably said dozens. "Pick your targets! Fire for effect!" Griffin yelled, her actions matching her words. She squeezed the trigger methodically, placing single shots on the head of the nearest Amble with commendable accuracy, aiming for the eyes and maw. A lasbolt burst against the roof of the thing's mouth, blowing a large chunk of brain matter backwards which clung to the frozen wall, solidifying like an obscene outgrowth as the creature toppled backwards. It hit the floor with a concussion which I was certain I could hear even over the cacophony of combat. "Omnisire, protect us!" Logash was shivering in shock, which surprised me with all that metal in him. Evidently, looking at hollows of exotic species in the comfort of his chambers was rather more fun than having the blood-soaked reality trying to tear his face off. Over there, 8 o'clock. Jürgen swung his hand in a familiar gesture, lobbing a frag grenade over the heads of the nearest monsters to burst among the ones clustered at the back. Juveniles just out of the nest, according to Logash, when he had a chance to examine them, but they looked dangerous enough to me, pushing forward as maddened by bloodlust as any of the others we'd encountered. A scream to my right snapped my head round just in time to see a pair of hideous mandibles close around the arm of the medic with a loud crunching sound which spoke of broken bones or worse. As the creature lifted him off the ground, I turned, chainsawed, shrieking, and leapt forward to lop through the distended jaw. He fell heavily, clutching his wounded arm, and scrabbled for a self-injector from his pouch with his uninjured hand. That should have been enough to establish my participation in the battle and allow me to go back to babysitting Logash. But of course the thing came at me. I swung the weapon again, cursing myself for my stupidity. Jürgen hefted the melter uncertainly, unable to get a shot without killing as many of us as the creatures, and I had a moment to wonder if I'd ever get the chance to suggest he settle for something a little more manageable, like a hell gun or a flamer next time. Then a line of bloody craters stitched themselves across the amble's chest. Thanks, I called to Carter, and administered the coup de grace to my staggering foe, lopping the head from its shoulders as it fell to its knees. Probably unnecessarily, but it was a suitably theatrical gesture for a hero of the Imperium to make, and the surrounding troopers seemed to appreciate it. Abruptly, I became aware of the sudden silence around us. It was broken only by the ticking of the refreezing ice and the groans of the wounded. Casualties? I asked, playing up to my caring image. Griffin made a rapid assessment. Too serious. A few cuts and bruises among the rest, but they'll live. She turned her attention to the medic, who was treating Dreer as best he could with his one good hand. He was assisted by a grim-faced Voorhees. How is she? I asked, walking over to them. She'll be fine, Voorhees said flatly, clearly in no mood to accept any other outcome. The memory of him calling her given name as the fight started came back to me, and I smelled trouble. The nature of their relationship, clearly more than purely professional, was pretty obvious. And if she'd died, he'd no doubt blame himself for not having been on point instead of her, or Carter for switching their positions. Either way, it was clear his mind was no longer on the mission objectives. Won't she, Doc?
1. Doc. A traditional nickname for the squad medic in most guard units. Most aren't qualified doctors, of course, being trained simply in primary aid techniques designed to stabilize casualties long enough to get them back to a properly equipped aid station or chirurgical facility.
Sure she will, the medic said, the doubt in his voice obvious to everyone but Voorhees. Stick in an augmatic lung and new liver, she'll be as good as new. Provided we got her back in time. I hesitated. Our mission was far from over, but we'd seen no sign of any orc presence in these tunnels, and the greenskins weren't exactly subtle. Come to that, they wouldn't have left any ambles alive down here either. Chances were the tunnel system was fully secure, and there was nothing more to be gained by completing the sweep. On the other hand, I haven't made it through to my second century by being complacent. We needed to be certain the orcs didn't know the tunnels were here, and even the slightest doubt could fatally undermine our plans for the defence for the refinery. But that certainty could only be bought with time. Time Dreer clearly didn't have if we were going to get her back in time to save her life. I hate choices like that. There are no good outcomes. All you can do is pick what seems to be the least bad. And so I dithered. The certainty of safety or the potential loss of my carefully nurtured image as a leader who cared about the troopers he serves with. The illusion that I was one of them had saved my life many times as they repaid the loyalty they believed I held for them. It was Jürgen who broke the deadlock in my vacillating mind. As instructed, he'd stuck close to Logash, who, predictably, was ignoring the carnage around him. He was now pottering around the chamber, waving his auspex about and digging chunks of ice out of the walls with his augmatic fingers for reasons entirely beyond me. Commissar, you'd better take a look at this. As usual, my aide's voice betrayed no excitement, but I knew him well enough to recognise the undercurrent of urgency in his tone. I walked over to the corner where the tech priest was crouched, grubbing in the ice like a holidaying infant in the coastal sand. "What have you found?" I asked, then got a good look over Logash's shoulder and wished I hadn't. "It appears to be a midden," he said, his voice curiously like a Jew of comparing scrumble statistics. He picked up a fragment of bone which looked uncomfortably human in origin.
A what?
Jürgen asked, his brow furrowing. A spoil heap, Logash explained. Ambles are quite organised, disposing of their waste in a specific part of the den. I took a step backwards as it occurred to me just what the discolorations in the ice that he was so blithely digging through consisted of. The tech priest prattled on. With proper analysis, we should be able to determine what they were eating.
We know what they were eating. The miners. Griffin came over to join us and lowered her voice.
Drea's in a bad way, Commissar. Do we go on or go back?
It was clear which alternative she preferred.
I doubt that would have represented a sufficient food source, Logash said, still digging, absently responding to the only part of a remark which interested him.
He began to work something large out of the ice.
What have we here?
It's a skull, Jürgen responded helpfully, unable to identify a rhetorical question if one sat up and bit him. I glanced at it, idly wondering which of the luckless miners this was, then froze as something about the shape triggered warning bells in my mind. The cranium was low-browed and heavy, the jaw prothogenous, and as Logash brushed the obscuring ice away, jutting tusks became visible, protruding from the lower mandible.
From an orc, I added unnecessarily.
So I had my answer. Whether or not the greenskins were aware of it, there was a way down into this labyrinth, somewhere beyond their lines, and any other choice I might have made was now moot. I turned back to Griffin.
We go on, I said.